This episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online is where the game starts.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to the Locked On MLB, Locked On Tigers crossover. I am your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. My co-host today, he's right over there. If you're watching us on the YouTubes, it's Scott Bentley from Locked On Tigers. This episode is being recorded and dropped on Sunday, the 24th day of April, 2022. Lots of news to come around about the Detroit Tigers, not the least of which one of the greatest Tigers of all time has joined an exclusive club, the 3,000 hit, 500 home run club, an automatic admission to the Hall of Fame. Just ask Rafael Palmeiro. Thanks for making us your first listen and making Locked On Tigers your first listen. You could follow us on Twitter, Locked On MLB Pods, same handle for Instagram. You can follow my personal account. You can see it right there. It's at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Hey, Scott, where can people find you on the Twitterverse and Instagramverse?
They can, the show, Locked On Tigers, is at Locked On Tigers for both of those social media platforms. And then myself is at Bentley Scotty on both of them.
All right. Well, hey, it's been a lean couple of years for the Detroit Tigers. Yes, they took a little bit of a step forward last year where they rose from horrific to merely under 500. But when you can celebrate something like Miguel Cabrera, who is in the 20th season of his big league career, and 15 of those years have been a member of the Detroit Tigers, and he is now part of the 3,000 hit, 500 home run club. In fact, he has 3,002 hits and 502 home runs to his name. Tell me what this means. This is obviously, we're wrapping up his career. He doesn't have many years left. But in his 15 years, he has to be considered one of the greats in the history of the Tigers. And you know, where does he fit amongst Tiger fans? And how does this feel for you?
Well, it was an incredible weekend, I'll be honest. I had the pleasure of being there for the event. I was at Comerica Park for the 3,000th hit, so that was super cool. Got a great view of it. It was a really, really cool moment, and to be able to pack the stadium on a day game after a rainout and still almost have a sellout crowd is, I think, really shows the magnitude of Miguel Cabrera to the city. I got to bring my dad. It was super cool. So I got to share that moment, you know, with my dad. And it was a very, very cool, very, very cool weekend. Miguel Cabrera is, I'm 24 years old. He came to the Tigers when I was in elementary school, right? So Miguel Cabrera is my childhood for the Detroit Tigers. I mean, he came in right after that 06 team that fell short in the World Series. He came in the year after that and never looked back. And I think I was in the third grade when the 06 team happened. So he's been a staple on this team for most of my entire life. And so that obviously holds a lot of weight. And there's a lot of people my generation and younger that's like all we've known is really Miguel Cabrera just like dominating and hitting four and or three. Like that's really all we've known. It was a really, really cool moment. Seeing Jose Iglesias run across the diamond in a Rockies uniform and give him a hug was
wonderful. That gave me chills.
That pulled at the heartstrings a little bit. That made a lot of people really emotional. They're still neighbors in the off season. Like they're still like best friends. So just all around very, very cool moment. His family being there and everything, the number counter in the outfield, getting to like do the final, tally and see it turn to 3K. Everything about it was very, very well done. I don't think it took too much of a break from the game action where, like, you know, players were going to complain about it. Thought it was all wonderfully done. And as far as his career goes, I'm not sure him hitting 3K changes too many people's opinion at this point on him, on right. like how much they like him or how good they think he was or whatever. But as far as being able to see it when he's announced that after next season he's retiring, being able to see that before he goes was definitely a very, very cool thing.
Yeah, it's funny because you said it's your childhood. I've talked a lot about the rule of seven, which is your first. I do believe there may be some exceptions to this, but for most people like us who are big sports fans, their first concrete memories of sporting events happen when they're around 7 years old. And yeah. And if you are in your mid-20s, your whole life, Miguel Cabrera has been part of your
time. I remember the trade. I remember the day the trade was announced. I remember everything about that day, and I was in like fourth grade. And I remember everything about the day that Miguel Cabrera got traded to the Detroit Tigers. And like we got, you know, prime Dontrelle Willis too. People forget because mm-hmm. he got hurt and his career was cut short, obviously, sadly. But like he was part of that. And like everybody here loved Cameron Maben when he first came up. So we were like, oh, like that kind of sucks. But little did we know.
Yeah, I mean, he's had so many. I mean, obviously, he won the Triple Crown in 2012. Has had a couple of, you know, won some batting titles. People poo-poo batting titles. Well, he's also led the league in on-base percentage in those years and slugging percentage in those years and OPS in those years. Just as an offensive player, just right from the beginning, when he was a 20-year-old with the Marlins, homering off of Roger Clemens in the World Series. I love it when you have a player like that who gets their World Series ring out of the way early. You know, Cal Ripken was like that with the Orioles. And Nolan Ryan was like that with the Mets. Just sort of like, okay, we don't have to worry about are they ever going to win a ring.
Got Juan done. Soto for even current people.
Yeah, exactly. Juan Soto. That's a great example right there. I love it when that happened. Jeter obviously got a ring his rookie year. But what I love is – you know, there's a throwback feeling to him for me. And I'm bringing up my age seven for a reason. I'm considerably older than you. And I remember 1979 was my first year that I remembered baseball. And I'm bringing this up because there was a Sports Illustrated issue that I vividly remember that it had there was a lot of old players, like players who were in the league 15, 20 years, who were suddenly having great years that year. You know, Gaylord Perry was the defending Cy Young Award winner. Willie Stargell was on the verge of winning the co-MVP. Lou Brock and Yastrzemski were about to get their 3,000th hit. Pete Rose was sparking the Phillies. Manny Mota was having a great year. Phil Niekro was being a 20-game winner with Atlanta. And so there's a lot of these old guys, 40 and up, who were having just fabulous seasons that year. And then the cover was them all on a rocking chair with beards and instead of a bat, it'd be a cane, instead of a ball, it'd be an aspirin, but they're all, you know, they're all playing wonderfully there. And what I distinctly remember, there was something about those players who were reaching these milestones. And with the exception of Perry and Rose, everyone was doing it for the team that everyone associates them with.
Sure.
You know, Manny Mota with the Dodgers, Niekro with the Braves, Brock with the Cardinals, Yastrzemski with the Red Sox, Stargell with the Pirates. And they all of it, if you look on the back of their baseball card, it's like straight down the line, year after year after year, the same team. And while Cabrera started his career and had five fine seasons with the Marlins, most people associate him with the Tigers. And there's a throwback element with him that he is so long with the Tigers that when you see him, even some of the lean years, and there have been some lean years, that there's a connection to the team that went to the World Series against San Francisco, the team that had that, you know, that knockdown dragout 2013, where they beat a very good A's team in back-to-back years in five games, hard-fought series, beat the Yankees 1 year, fell to the Red Sox the other. you know, that great run where if they just had a bullpen, they would have won at least one World Series.
Correct.
But, you know, there were three straight years they went to the ALCS. And, you know, and they were and he's a connection to that. And you get the sense that he's almost like a connective tissue as this new Tiger team is here with new players coming up. And I think by next year they could be contenders. And, you know, it's like when you have a new batch and you have that one player who they got to play alongside. I think for some of the young players, we say, like, I played alongside Cabrera. Was kind of like some of the players on the Cardinals who went on to be part of the team that won the World Series later got to say, I got to play with Lou Brock. Or something, right. I got to play with Yastrzemski and those Red Sox teams. And he's a throwback in so many ways.
For sure. There's a lot in there that I think you hit the nail on the head with. And I tweeted this out and after it happened, but there's really no better signal or metaphor for passing of the torch greater than Spencer Torkelson hitting a home run with Miguel Cabrera on base after from his 3,000th hit. Like, that's pretty much the definition of passing of the torch, right? Miggy gets his 3,000th hit single, and then Torkelson hits a home run to score him on that hit. So that was a super cool moment. And Torkelson talked all spring training and all beginning of the season about the fact that he gets to play with Miguel Cabrera, and it's a crazy feeling every time he looks at him. And Tarek Skubal told a story about how the first time he walked into the clubhouse and the first time he approached Miguel Cabrera and he didn't know what to say and was like starstruck and was like, why is like a first ballot Hall of Famer is just like in my clubhouse? Like, I just share a clubhouse with Miggy. And the stories that all those guys tell is right. As you said it, it's just, and you can tell it means so much to them to be able to share a clubhouse with him. And Torkelson takes it higher than I think anybody. I mean, when Hinch told Tork that he was going to get the first base job out of spring, he did it with Miguel Cabrera in his office. It wasn't just manager and Torkelson. It was Hinch, Cabrera, and Torkelson. And Cabrera gave him a first base glove as like a passing of the torch. Like, I'm just going to DH from here on out. And he's been adamantly against that in his whole career. So like, there's a lot of passing of the torch stuff like that happening. And you can tell how much it means to them that. And as far as like the association with the Detroit Tigers, something that everybody started noticing over the last couple of years is that Miguel Cabrera, when you ask him where he is from, he now says Detroit, Michigan. He says Detroit is his hometown. After he got 3,000 hits, he said, I wanted to do it in front of my hometown crowd of Detroit. I wanted to do it in front of these fans of my hometown. Like, that is how he refers to Detroit now. It is no longer, you know, the city I play for, the team I play for. He refers to it as where he is from, which is crazy. And so I that holds a lot of weight with Detroit and with mm-hmm. the fans and I'm sure with him. And it's definitely not something that the fan base takes lightly. And it's something we very much noticed when it started happening. And so not only do baseball fans and kind of, you know, all of us, he's going to go into Cooperstown with a Tigers hat on, right? But he himself now just associates, oh, I am a Detroiter. It's no longer, you know, anywhere else. It's no longer Florida. It's no longer Venezuela. Like, I'm a Detroiter. That's my hometown now.
And think about some of the players who are playing alongside. You mentioned Torkelson. Get to just sort of put that on their resume, their whole life.
Absolutely.
Alongside of them. By the way, we're talking about resumes. With spring in the air, it's time for renewal and growth and professionally growing yourself. So get those resumes ready. You may not have worked with Miguel Cabrera, but you probably worked with someone worthwhile. I got to be looking for jobs all the time. I got myself a good one now. I'm a teacher. But you know what? I've had to, for years and years, send my resume out when I was a video producer, working TV and all this stuff. It's a pain. It's an absolute pain. But guess what? As small businesses grow, LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and free. If you're on the other end and you're looking to get people to work for you, say, hey, where's my Sully that I can hire? Where's my Torkelson? Where's my Miguel Cabrera? Well, you know what? You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs and reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. It was 809 million, and then I joined. Add your job and the purple hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people to hire. Simple tools like screening process make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you want to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? 40 million! Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonMLB. That's linkedin.com/lockedonMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Hey, thanks so much for making Locked On MLB your first listen. Make Locked On Tigers your second listen. Come on, let's go for this. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast, recaps of Major League Baseball games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, we are continuing our Locked On crossover. I'm your pal Sully of Locked On MLB. Sitting over there, is Scott Bentley from Locked On Tigers. All right, I'm super envious of you, man. I've never been to Comerica Park. I've been to Tiger Stadium. Did you ever go to Tiger Stadium?
I mean, Comerica was up when I was two, three. So, like, I did, as an infant, I did attend, but I don't have any recollection of it now.
Yeah,
and they play games where it used to stand. They play, like, big, you know, state high school games and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love when they leave, like, they do that at Yankee Stadium. There's the field that where Comiskey Park used to be. It's like you're respecting the past there.
Absolutely.
I have not gone. The last time I was in Detroit was 1991, and my father and I went to go see a Blue Jays-Tigers game. At Tiger Stadium, and it was packed because that the Tigers were good in 91 and the Blue Jays were tremendous, and there's a lot of people coming over from Toronto. It was a pretty tense game. But you were there to see the hit, and it was the first game of a doubleheader, right?
Yeah, I attended all three games this entire series.
Okay.
I basically told myself I was gonna find a way to be at every game until he got 3K. And then a rainout happened on Friday.
That's why it was a doubleheader. Okay.
Right. And so I had gotten my tickets for Friday, and I was ready to roll. And then that game got postponed, but the Saturday game was a 1 o'clock. So the game got postponed to the nightcap of Saturday. And I was like, okay, well, I can't risk him not getting it in the day game. So now I have to go to the day game, which is why I'm very sunburnt. And he got it in the first at bat of the day game, just got it out of the way early, and I just got to enjoy and spend 10 hours at my favorite place on earth. So it ended up being okay.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so I just saw the clips of it on MLB.com. It looked like a carnival. It looked like it was
an event.
I'm fine with going to an empty stadium. Lord knows I've been to enough Oakland A's games that I've been at a place, because there's something sometimes – there's something to being at an empty stadium where you know the only people there are diehard fans.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And you can walk around.
Yeah.
But I was
seeing a couple of 114 lost games in my tenure as well. Yeah.
But like I was just at Jackie Robinson Day at Dodger Stadium. There was 50 some odd thousand people there. And there is something to being there when the place is packed. And there's the hum, and there was, of course, the standing O we all gave to Rachel Robinson, and the game itself was a pretty good. It was a 5-3 game. It was a pretty good ball game. So, how many games at Comerica have you been at where it's packed to the gills with that sort of hum and excitement?
Yeah, it was different, and like I've been to. I basically live at Comerica Park. I live close enough and have my entire life. And I don't even have a memory of like my first Tiger game or my first. I don't have a like, oh, this is, I remember my first game at Comerica. Like, I've just basically grown up there. So like I've been to a lot of games in that ballpark, and very, very few have had the feel that one had. The I think one of the most fascinating things about it was the fact that even after he got 3K, the rest of that game and the rest of the night game, every time he came up to bat, he still, everyone in the crowd stood to their feet, and it was standing, everyone was standing and giving him a round of applause after every pitch and everything. And he had already gotten it. Like, it was, It was done. Like, he did it, but it didn't matter. Like, everybody in the stadium stood up for every Miguel Cabrera at bat, even the seven he had after getting 3K. And that will always be something that will stand out to me. But as far as energy matched, I can't think of too terribly many. Like, I had the fortune of being at in 2006, I was at one of the Jeremy Bonderman game, we call it, when he beat the when we eliminated the Yankees in the ALDS.
Oh, right, yeah.
So like that was I vividly remember
they carried
that one.
Jim Leland off on their shoulders, if I remember. Right,
yeah. And Joel Zamaya was spraying the crowd with champagne.
Joel Zamaya, wow.
Okay. Yes, yeah. So there was a. Like, that game obviously had a big feel to it because, you know, we took down the Yankees after being horrible for 15 years. But the only other one I can think of that even comes close, and it doesn't beat it, but the only other one I can think of that comes close was the day before the trade deadline in 2017, Verlander was scheduled to start. And we all knew that he was probably going to get traded, or like we all had a hinge that like he's probably going to go. So I got to go to that game and he got a huge standing O when he went off for the final time. And like, that was, you know, I don't think besides the postseason, I don't think people were more just like wanting Verlander to do well every single pitch than that game. But then it ended up, he didn't get traded until a month later, 'cause you could do that back then. So right. It ended up not even being that cool of a moment in hindsight, but yeah, there are very few games that I've been to that matched the energy and just everything about that game was phenomenal.
I'll tell you one reason I think that, and I'm going to get a little to my own memories as well. The sense of a baseball team's job is to give fans memories for a summer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could say it's to win the World Series, but only that means only one team succeeds.
Right.
And I grew up a huge Red Sox fan, and my first memory was 1979. I didn't see them in the playoffs till I was 14 years old.
Right.
So, but I still love them. And there was the year that Yastrzemski hit both his 3,000th hit and his 400th home run the same year. And there was the big chase for that. And I'll talk about that in another episode because I have specific memories about trying to follow that before the age of the internet as a 7-year-old.
Right.
But I have vivid memories of 1983 where the Red Sox were not a good team. They did not contend that year. And even though they had some wonderful players on the team, but it was Yastrzemski's final year. And I remember going to many games, and every time Yastrzemski was there, got a hit, didn't get a hit. He got a huge standing ovation because it was everybody saying, thank you.
Exactly. Thank
you. And I think that the standing ovations, even after he got the hit, are you know, there are 40,000 people in an April game, and they weren't there to see Torkelson.
Right.
You know, they were there. They weren't there for the terse Detroit-Colorado rivalry. You know, they were there to thank Miguel Cabrera.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's, you know, that they know they're seeing, like, I have up here, I'm at baseballreference.com, the single greatest website in the history of the planet Earth. And in terms of total bases, Only four Tigers in their history have more total bases than Miguel Cabrera has as a Detroit. This is not counting his Florida stats.
Right, sure.
Harry Heilman, Charlie Gehringer, Al Kaline, Ty Cobb.
Yeah, those are dudes with statues in left field. Three of those four guys have not only their numbers
they're
retired,
in the Hall of Fame.
But have statues, right, in left field.
Just going down the line of, you just look at the, you know, in terms of, I know we're not supposed to look at runs batted in, but those, that four, Cobb, Kaline, Heilman, and Gehringer, are the only people who have driven in more runs. Mm-hmm. He's driven in more runs as a Tiger than Hank Greenberg, you know,
Mr.
than Alan Trammell.
Yeah.
And look, at, I don't think WAR is the end-all, be-all that some people, you know, make it out to be.
For sure.
But he's in the top 10 of the Detroit Tigers. And, you know, by the way, looking at it and all those leaders that I just looked at, the fact that Lou Whitaker keeps popping up, going like, he was a one and done on the Hall of Fame ballot? Really?
Well, what's with that? That's a, we could go down that rabbit hole.
One and done?
Yeah.
Okay, Veterans Committee, get Lou in there, okay?
Correct.
If they got Jack Morris in there, you can put Lou Whitaker in there.
Correct.
You know, I hate to play that game, but still. But this is a storied franchise. And a lot of the players who are ahead of him in the all-time Tigers list did so in a pre-integration era, on of which I have to hang a lot of the stats with a gigantic asterisk.
Yep.
You know, and so in the post-integration era, Kaline, Trammell, Whitaker, Verlander, and Cabrera are the greatest Tigers. And so that to me just shows why did they give him the standing ovation? Say thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, for as far as pure hitter, I would argue, honestly, no matter how old you are as a Tigers fan, he's probably the greatest hitter you've ever seen in Old English D.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how old you are. Yeah. And I think that that's a relatively fair and honestly safe argument to make. So I completely agree. And it was a really cool thing to see.
Yeah. And that he's – look, there have been some throwbacks over the years. And you're starting to see that there are some players who are probably going to spend the bulk of their career with one team. You know, Mike Trout is going to be an Angel for the foreseeable future. You know, you're going to see with the contract Tatis signed, he's going to be a Padre for the foreseeable. I mean, you're seeing Votto sign a huge contract with Cincinnati. You know, I think teams are wising up, saying we're better off signing our stars to a long-term deal and buying out their prime because we're never going to replace that value elsewhere. And, you know, so I think so that's one reason why you're seeing all these massive contracts to keep some of their players, you know, just keep them their entire prime with one team, which I actually like. You know, I like the fact that we know some of these players are going to be there for a while.
And I agree. I completely. I mean, like Miggy, people like to rag on that contract all the time. And, you know, from a pure value standpoint and pure on-field production, from when he got the extension till now, has it been, you know, is his WAR and are his numbers up to what you thought they would be in the latter half of that extension? They're not. But you bet every single dollar you have that he absolutely was worth it in 2017 to 2019 when the team was perpetually losing 100 games and kids would only show up to the ballpark because they wanted to see Miguel Cabrera.
And there's another thing that, and I've talked about this in a previous podcast, why I kind of roll my eyes at the, he's being overpaid, this is a bad contract. Keep in mind, he was an MVP, a legitimate MVP candidate earlier in his career, making under $500,000 a year.
Correct.
So why does that never get factored in?
Correct.
Yeah, he's overpaid later in his career. He was severely underpaid earlier in his career.
Yeah.
Why doesn't that ever come up when people talk about these bad contracts? I understand that you want to talk about the concept of a bad contract, like, for example, like when the Yankees signed Jacoby Ellsbury for years and years, and he was, everyone knew he was going to break down. He broke down. Everyone knew Pablo Sandoval was going to break down. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened when he signed a huge contract with the Red Sox. I mentioned that so people didn't think I was just picking on the Yankees. But it's never, when people say, this is a bad contract, that's a bad contract, they never take into account the years where they were being, they were putting up gigantic numbers and being paid.
Incredibly team favorable.
Right. You know, and that's why, you know, is when I ask people that don't always do the owner's work for them.
Correct.
You know, there was, and when he was there in Detroit, when they were contending year in and year out, being the MVP when they were in first place, okay? And yeah, he was well compensated then. He was making 20 million tomatoes back then, okay? That's slightly more than I make selling Blue Nile and Built Bars here at Locked On MLB, slightly. But I mean, yeah, he's worth it. 40,000 people aren't coming to an April game in Detroit without him.
Correct. Yeah, no, it was the, I think they said it was the second highest single, between both games, the second highest single day attendance number in Comerica Park history.
There you go. Gee whiz. I wonder if that's worth it.
It's like 60 or 70,000 people across both games.
I'm getting
definitely
worked up.
Not getting that without him.
I'm getting worked up. Do you know what? I need to calm myself and then build my energy up. Do you know what I should do? I'm gonna grab myself a Built Bar. Built Bars. You love your Built Bars.
Absolutely, I do.
Have you tried the puffs?
I have tried the puffs. They're fantastic. Fantastic. And it's all real chocolate they're covered in.
Yeah, but they're also the first ever, and I've looked this up, the first ever protein infused marshmallow. They're fluffy. They're marshmallowy. They're not just a protein bar. They're a treat. And they've got the puffs got so many great flavors. The churro, coconut marshmallow. I love the banana cream pie. They're fantastic. They're all covered 100% chocolate. They're low calorie, high protein. Now look it. I just found out recently that candy bars are not good for you. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. I thought they were healthy. But as it turns out, you're not supposed to be pounding candy bars. But I said, what about these Built Bars? These Built Bars are like candy bars. They taste like as good as one. But guess what? Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, 70 grams of protein. And that's a little bit better than a candy bar. But I say, Sully, cite your source there. I said, what you got to do is you got to go to Built.com. Scroll down to the macros chart. You're going to be blown away by what you see, and you're also going to be blown away by the flavors. What's your favorite flavor, buddy?
Anything with peanut butter in it.
Okay, there you go.
Anything. Also, the coconut ones are fantastic.
Yeah, but the coconut almond, the coconut.
Yeah.
Stacey Gotsoulias of Lockdown Yankees loves the mint brownie. I love the raspberry, but they're all great. And here's the thing, what they do. They don't think health first and taste afterwards. No, they go the other way. They come up with a great flavor. And then they find out a way to make it healthy. I don't know how they do it. I've asked. They won't tell me. But they do it every single time. So I know what you're thinking. There must be a call to action. And guess what? You'd be right. Go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Okay, we're here with Scott Bentley. Or if you're following him on Twitter, Bentley Scott. He goes all Yoda on Twitter. But the Tigers are playing in obviously it's early, and you can't be scoreboard watching quite yet. But I don't think there's a winning team in the American League Central at this point.
No, it's been a doozy for sure. The American League Central's been interesting up to this point. All the offenses are just terrible. And, like, that's kind of something we're seeing across all of baseball, not really just the division. The league-wide OPS is, like, in the mid-600s or, like, 670s or something ridiculously low. So that's kind of all around. Baseball has been pretty pitcher-friendly so far. But, yeah, the American League Central yeah, it hasn't looked great, and a lot of teams are dealing with. I mean, we have half of our team is basically on the IL right now. Chicago, I know, is going through something very similar. You know, highlighted by Eloy over the weekend. Just a lot of injuries on their team as well. I mean, Cleveland is all pitching, no hitting. Kansas City still really young, and who knows what the heck to make of Minnesota. So it is a complete dumpster fire so far, to be completely honest with you. And I think it's really going to come down to just which team's offense finally decides to wake up first.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you right now what it is. We are living in a world where the Minnesota Twins have reduced their magic number to 145. That's right. Any combination of Twin victories and Cleveland Guardian losses equaling 145 will clinch the American League Central for the Minnesota Twins. By the way, as I'm recording this, the Twins are at even 500. You know, the White Sox have stumbled up. This is actually very, very good news. I know this is weird to talk about the standings, but it's very good news for the White Sox, who are in the middle of a 7-game losing streak. They started the season 6-2. They're in the middle of a 7-game losing streak. They have a run differential of negative 18. Okay? They're currently tied with the Tigers, who are on a 2-game losing streak of their own. And yet, they're 1 game back in the loss column.
Yeah, you know, we haven't legitimately won a series yet this season. We dropped 2 of 3 from Chicago, 2 of 3 from Boston, 2 of 3 from Colorado. And then we played the Royals. It was supposed to be a 4-game series, and one got postponed till June. So technically we won 2 of 3 in that series, but we didn't play the 4th game. So we have not outright won a legitimate series yet this year, and the White Sox are somehow right there with us.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things, if I'm in charge of Cleveland or Detroit or heck Kansas City, you almost say, hey, what would happen if we bring up all of our best prospects now? What would happen if we just go for it right now and maybe try to go on a couple of game winning streak? Because there's going to be a team. Again, I bring up the whole, there are games that will haunt you in April that you're going to forget all about in September.
Sure.
There's going to be a point where the American League Central may be one of those, you know, divisions that limp to get a single representative to the finish line. And some teams are going like, God, if we picked up a couple extra wins in this month and a couple extra wins in that month, we'd be potentially a division winner. And, you know, for a team like Detroit, who you and I talked about this before the season began, I don't think Detroit's going to win anything this year. I think they're going to be improved. But what if they do? What if the division opens up and you say, wait a minute, 83 or 84 wins might be enough, you know?
I mean, we've seen it before. Like, and the crazy thing is, I mean, I always go back to this year because it's prevalent in my head, but we're talking about the Tigers too. In 2006, the team that beat you in the World Series won like 82 games in the regular, that Cardinals team.
I think they won 83 games, yeah.
Yeah, literally won eight. They were barely over 500, like a game or two over 500, and won the World Series. So, like, all you need is a chance to get in, man. And I it's still very early, and I still honestly have full faith that the White Sox are just comfortably the best team in the division still. But, I mean, now would be the time to, like, wake the offense up. Like, why don't we pounce and try and take advantage of – and, again, there's not – some of it's kind of out of our control because we do have so many injuries that we are dealing – I mean, Manning, Mize, Chafin, Cisnero, Funkhauser, Green. Baez just got off the IL for his first game back, was on Sunday. I mean, it's been a very hard thing to navigate, but now would be the time. Like, we're looking around like, hey, now would be the time for the offense to wake up, because if you could get out to a surprising lead in April. I mean, the Tigers went over 500 from May till the end of the season last year.
Right,
if it wasn't
right.
for like the worst April in the history of Aprils. I mean, we would have been a 500 or even better team last season. And then we added a ton of pieces over the offseason. So we're looking to not have a repeat of last April is kind of the biggest thing.
I'm going to bring up a year. The year is 2005. Now, the San Diego Padres were outscored by nearly 50 runs that year. Okay. And they finished the season, because they had Bruce Bochy as their manager, 82-80. They got swept in the division series. So technically, they finished the year 82-83. They were not a good team. They were the definition of a mediocre team. And not only that, they were their Their September. I'm at baseballreference.com, the same greatest website in the history of the planet Earth. Their September, I think they had a losing record in September, if I'm not mistaken.
That's remarkable.
Here it is. They finished the season 16-14. Okay, but they had an 8-18 July. Okay. And they finished the year, as I said, 82-80. That was the record. Five games ahead of Arizona, who second place Arizona was 77-85. Okay. This team can hang division title on their mantle. All right. Now, they got killed in the postseason by St. Louis, but still, they won the division.
Division title.
Yeah, division title. There you go. They had a pile. They sprayed champagne. They had one playoff game. There you go. And at home, there you go.
There you go.
No one else came close to a winning record. And so, if you're the Tigers and you take a look at your farm system and you say, hey, wait a minute. What if we call up everyone who's any good? And you know what? If it doesn't work out, we send them back down. But what if you put the best product on the field and cross your fingers that you win 83, 84 games and cross your fingers that everyone else wets the bed? Imagine what it would mean for this team, this young team, to be able to get a taste of an October, even being through a lousy division. What that would mean.
Yeah, it would be a lot. And thankfully, this season, I think they were kind of proactive with that a little bit. And like Green is going to be in the majors the second that he's healthy again. Torque is already here and it has, after a slow like first three games, has been doing well lately. So Casey Mize and Matt Manning both went to the IL. And so we called up Bo Brisky, who is one of our better organization pitching prospects. And you know, he went to school, so he's already in his early mid-20s as well. Like, he made his MLB debut on Saturday night. And so you're seeing a team that for the last 5 years has done everything in their power to lose as much as possible. And it's so nice and refreshing to see that a little bit and just see some proactiveness about like, hey, you know, maybe we actually want to try and put the best product on the field.
God forbid. And maybe, just maybe, that could be enough to win.
Maybe. In Miggy's toast after in the locker room after hitting 3K, he said, let's go win the division.
Well, look at that. Maybe he'll be prescient. Well, you know, it should be at least, you know what? At least it's going to be a fun year.
Yes.
At least it's going to be a fun year. So, and it's going to be fun to have Scott Bentley hosting Locked On Tigers. And I hope for you it's a fun year, because it's more enjoyable to do one of these podcasts where you have something fun to talk
about.
Our sympathy to Ethan Smith and the host of Locked On Pirates and Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds.
Yes,
by the way, remember the Reds last September 12th or 13th were a wild card team.
Yep.
Things change
very quickly when you have ownership that does not want to spend money.
All right, but I'd love to spend money on you. Scott Bentley, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Bentley Scotty. You can follow me on Instagram at the same thing. You can follow the show on Instagram or on Twitter at Locked On Tigers.
Great. And you can follow us at Locked On MLB Pods on both Twitter, and on Instagram. I'm your pal Sully, but Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Doing a Sunday episode. Those are always fun to do. With Scott Bentley and talking about Miggy Cabrera, future Hall of Famer, and someone's going to get a statue of himself. This has been a Locked On MLB Locked On Tigers crossover for the 24th day of April, 2022. Thank you, Scott Bentley, for joining the show. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.